princess 15,000 years ago. Not a chance. Are your mate and brother not here with you? No, Rigelus laughed. You're so like Danica, a born liar.
I'll take that as a compliment, she lifted her chin. You knew she was on to you.
Of course. Her quest for the truth began with her bloodhound gift. Not a gift of the body's strength, but of magic, such as the shifters should not have. She could scent other shifters with strange powers.
Like Sophie and Baxian, Danica had found him through researching his bloodline, but had she scented it too?
It prompted her to investigate her own bloodline's history, all the way back to the shifter's arrival in this world, to learn where her gifts came from. And she eventually began to suspect the truth.
Bryce's throat worked. Look, I already did the whole villain monologuing thing with Micah this spring, so cut to the chase. Rigelus chuckled again.
We shall get to that in a moment, he went on. Danica realized that the shifters are fey.
Bryce blinked. What?
Not your kind of fey, of course. Your breed dwelled in a lovely, verdant land, rich with magic. If it's of any interest to you, your starborn bloodline specifically hailed from a small isle a few miles from the mainland. And while the mainland had all manner of climes, the isle existed in beautiful, near-permanent twilight. But only a select few in the entirety of your world could shift from their humanoid forms to animal ones. The Midgard shifters were fey from a different planet. All the fey in that world shared their form with an animal. The mare descended from them too. Perhaps they once shared a world with your breed of fey, but they had been alone on their planet for long enough to develop their own gifts.
They don't have pointed ears.
Oh, we bred that out of them. It was gone within a few generations.
An isle of near-permanent twilight, the homeworld of her breed of fey. A land of dusk.
Dusk's truth.
Bryce breathed. It wasn't just the name of this room that Danica had been talking about with Sophie. Rigelus didn't answer, and she didn't know what to make of it, but Bryce asked,
Why lie to everyone? Two breeds of fey, both rich in magic. They were ideal food. We couldn't allow them to unify against us.
So you turned them against each other, made them two species at odds.
Yes, the shifters easily and swiftly forgot what they had once been. They gladly gave themselves to us and did our bidding, led our armies, and still do.
The Prime had said something similar. The wolves had lost what they had once been. Danica had known that. Danica had known the shifters had once been fey, were still fey, but a different kind. And Project Thur? Why was Danica so interested in that?
Thur was the last time someone got as far as Danica did in learning about us. It didn't end well for them. I suppose she wanted to learn from their mistakes before acting.
She was going to tell everyone what you were.
Perhaps, but she knew she had to do it slowly. She started with Ophion. But her research into the bloodlines and the origins of the shifters, her belief that they'd once been a different type of fey from a different fey world, was important enough that they put her in touch with one of their most talented agents, Sophie Renast. From what I gather, Danica was very intrigued by Sophie and her powers. But Sophie, you see, had a theory too. About energy, what her Thunderbird gifts sensed while using First Light. And even better for Danica, Sophie was an unknown. Danica would be noticed poking about, but Sophie, as a passing human working in the archives, was easily missed. So Danica sent her to learn more, to go undercover, as you call it. She'd made an enormous mistake coming here. We were eventually notified by one of our mystics here, who learned it from prying into the mind of one of Ophion's command. So we did a little tugging, pointed Micah toward Synth, toward Danica.
No,
the word was a whisper. You think Micah acted alone? He was a brash, arrogant male. All it took was some nudging, and he killed her for us. Had no idea it was on our behalf, but it played out as we planned. He was eventually caught and killed for disturbing our peace. I thank you for that. Bryce shot from her chair. They'd killed Danica to keep all of this secret. She would rip them to shreds. You can try to run, Rigelus said, if that will make you feel better. Bryce didn't give him a chance to say more before she teleported back to the alcove, Hunt's power fading like a dimming flame inside her. No sign of Rune. But Hunt, he was on his knees, Umbra Mortis helmet discarded on the stone floor beside him, hands behind his head, bound with Gorsian manacles. His eyes turned wild, pleading, but there was nothing Bryce could do as freezing stone clamped around her wrists as well, and she found herself face to face with a grinning harpy. Chapter 74. Therian ran, or tried to. The mech suit blocked his exit with a giant gun. The pilot inside grinned.
Time to fry fish.
Clever, Therian ground out, and leapt back as the cannon gun fired. Only a smoking pile of rubble remained of the concrete where he'd stood.
Go!
Cormac yelled again, and Pippa's rifle thundered. Therian twisted to see the prince collapse to his knees, a gaping hole in his chest. He had to get him out. Couldn't leave him like this, where recovery would likely be thwarted by a beheading. But if he stayed, if he wasn't killed outright... He had 4 hours to reach water. The rebels would use that against him, and he might have sold his life away to the Viper Queen, but to live without his fins? He wasn't ready to lose that piece of his soul. Cormac's eyes rippled with fire as he met Therian's stare.
Run,
that gaze said. Therian ran. The mech suit behind him fired again, and he rolled between its massive legs. Shooting to his feet, he sped for the hole the mech suit had made in the wall. Daylight poured in through the billowing smoke. That tether in his chest, the Viper Queen's leash, seemed to whisper,
Get to water, you stupid bastard. Then return to me.
Therian dared a glance back as he leapt through the opening. The mech suit was advancing on Cormac. Pippa marched beside it now, smiling in triumph. Beyond them, row after row of half-made mech hybrids slumbered, waiting for activation and slaughter. It didn't matter which side they fought for. Cormac managed to lift a bloody hand to point behind Pippa. She drew up short and whirled to face the 5 glowing beings at the far end of the space.
The Asteri. Oh gods, they'd come.
Cormac gave no warning as he erupted into a ball of fire. Pippa was consumed by it first, then the mech pilot who burned alive in his suit. But the ball kept growing, spreading, roaring, and Therian began running again, not waiting to see if it could somehow, against all odds, take out the Asteri. He ran into the open air, following the tug of that leash back to the water, to Valbara, dodging the wolf guards now racing to the building. Sirens blared, white lights rippled into the sky, the Asteri's rage. Therian cleared the trees, kept running for the coast. Maybe he'd get lucky and find a vehicle before then, even if he had to steal it or put a gun to the driver's head. He was half a mile away when the entire building exploded, taking Cormac, the suits, and the rebels with it. Slumped on the cell floor, Rune's body ached from the beating he'd taken. Mordok had surrounded him with dreadwolves,
No shadows would have been able to hide Rune from the Bloodhound anyway. He'd have been sniffed out immediately. Had Day betrayed him? Pretended to be captured so he'd come here? He'd been so blind, so fucking blind, and now? The door to the cell far beneath the Asteri's palace opened. Rune, chained to the wall with Gorsian shackles, looked up in horror as Bryce and Athalar entered, similarly shackled. His sister's face was wholly white. Athalar bared his teeth at the harpy as she shoved him in. Since Mordok still lurked by the cell archway, grinning at them both, Rune had no doubt that the Hind was somewhere close by, that she'd be the one who got to work on them. Neither Athalar nor Bryce fought their captors, as they too were chained to the wall. Bryce was shaking, with fear or rage Rune didn't know. He met Mordok's stare, letting the Dreadwolf see just who the fuck he was tangling with. "How did you know I'd be here?" The Dreadwolf captain pushed off from the archway, violence in every movement.
"Because Rigelus planned it that way. I still can't believe you walked right into his hands, you stupid fuck."
"We came here to assist the Asteri," Rune tried. "You've got the wrong idea." From the corner of his eye, he could sense Bryce trying to catch his attention, but Mordok's face twisted with cruel delight.
"Oh, was that the excuse you were going to use in that alley? Or with the mystics? You forget who you're speaking to. I never forget a scent."
He sneered at Bryce and Hunt.
"I tracked you all around, Lunathian. Rigelus was all too happy to hear about your activities."
"I thought you reported to the Hind," Athalar said. The silver darts along Mordok's collar glinted as he stepped closer.
"Rigelus has a special interest in you lot. He asked me to sniff around."
He made a show of smelling Hunt.
"Maybe it's because your scent is wrong, Angel."
Athalar growled.
"What the fuck does that mean?"
Mordok angled his head with mocking assessment.
"Not like any other angel I've scented."
The harpy rolled her eyes and said to the captain,
"Enough. Leave us."
Mordok's lip curled.
"We're to wait here."
"Leave us," the harpy snapped. "I want a head start before she ruins my fun. Surely you know a thing or two about that, if you're sneaking around her to report to Rigelus."
Mordok bristled, but stalked off with a low snarl. Rune's mind raced. They should never have come here. Mordok had remembered his scent and tracked them these past weeks, had fed every location to Rigelus.
Fuck.
The harpy grinned.
"It's been a while since I've played with you, Athalar."
Hunt spat at her feet.
"Come and get it."
Rune knew he was trying to keep her from going for Bryce, buying them whatever time he could to find a way out of this shitstorm. Rune met Bryce's panicked look. She couldn't teleport, thanks to the Gorsian shackles. Could Cormac get back here? He was their only shot at getting out of these chains, their only shot at survival. Had Dex seen the capture? Even if he had, there were no reinforcements to send. The harpy drew a short, lethal knife, the kind so precise that it could carve skin from the most delicate places. She flipped it in her hand, keeping back from Athalar's reach, even with the chains. Her focus slid to Rune. Hate lit her eyes.
"Not so cocky now, are you, princeling?" she asked.
She pointed her knife toward his crotch.
"You know how long it takes for a male to grow back his balls."
Pure dread shot through him. Bryce hissed, "Keep your fucking hands off him." The harpy laughed.
"Does it bother you, princess, to see your males so roughly handled?"
She approached Rune, and he could do nothing as she ran the side of the blade down his cheek.
"So pretty,"
she murmured, her eyes like blackest hell.
"It will be a shame to ruin such beauty."
Hunt growled.
"Come play with someone interesting."
"Still the noble bastard,"
the harpy said, running the knife down the other side of Rune's face. If she came close enough, he could try to rip out her throat with his teeth, but she was too wary, kept far enough back.
Trying to distract me from harming others. Don't you remember how I cut up your soldiers, piece by piece, despite your pleading?
Bryce lunged against her chains, and Rune's heart cracked as she screamed, "Get the fuck away from him!"
"Listening to you squeal while I carve him will be a delight,"
the harpy said, and slid the knife to the base of Rune's throat. It was going to hurt. It would hurt, but because of his Vanir blood, he wouldn't die. Not yet. He'd keep healing while she sliced him apart.
"Get off him!"
Bryce bellowed. A guttural roar thundered in the words, as fey as he'd ever heard his sister. The tip of the knife pierced Rune's throat, its sting blooming. He dove deep, into the place where he'd always run to avoid his father's ministrations. They'd walked in here so foolishly, had been so blind. The harpy sucked in a breath, muscles tensing to shove in the knife. Something golden and swift as the wind barreled into her side and sent the harpy sprawling. Bryce shouted, but all the noise, all the thoughts in Rune's head eddied away as a familiar, lovely scent hit him, as he beheld the female who leapt to her feet, now a wall between him and the harpy. The Hind. Chapter 75.
"You fucking cunt,"
the harpy cursed, rising to draw a long, wicked sword. Rune couldn't move from the floor as the Hind unsheathed her own slim blade, as her beckoning scent floated to him, a scent that was somehow entwined with his own. It was very faint, like a shadow, so vague that he doubted anyone else would realize. The underlying scent belonged to him, and her scent had been familiar from the start, because Hypaxia was her half-sister, he realized. Family ties didn't lie. He'd been wrong about her being in House of Sky and Breath. The Hind could claim total allegiance to earth and blood.
"I knew it. I always knew it,"
the harpy seethed, wings rustling.
"Traitorous bitch."
It couldn't be. It couldn't be. Bryce and Hunt were frozen with shock. Rune whispered, "Day." Lydia Servos looked over a shoulder, and she said with quiet calm, in a voice he knew like his own heartbeat, a voice he had never once heard her use as the Hind,
"Night."
"The Asteri will carve you up and feed you to your dread wolves," the harpy crooned, sword angling, "and I'm going to help them do it."
The golden-haired female, Lydia, Day, only said to the harpy,
"Not if I kill you first."
The harpy lunged. The Hind was waiting. Sword met sword, and Rune could only watch as the shifter deflected and parried the angel's strike. Her blade shone like quicksilver, and as the harpy brought down another arm-breaking blow, a dagger appeared in Lydia's other hand. The Hind crossed dagger and sword and met the blow, using the harpy's movement to kick at her exposed stomach. The angel went down in a pile of wings and black hair, but she was instantly up, circling.
"The Asteri will let Pollux have at you, I think."
A bitter, cruel laugh. Pollux, the male hood. A blaring white noise blasted through Rune's head.
"Pollux will get what's coming to him, too,"
the Hind said, blocking the attack and spinning on her knees so that she was behind the harpy. The harpy twirled, meeting the blow, but backed a step closer to Rune. Their blades met again, the harpy pressing. The Hind's arms strained, the sleek muscles in her thighs visible through her skin-tight white pants as she pushed up, up to her feet. She kept her black boots planted. The harpy's stance was nowhere near as solid. Lydia's golden eyes slid to Rune's. She nodded shallowly. A command. Rune crouched, readying.
"Lying filth,"
the harpy raged, losing another inch, just a little further.
"When did they turn you?"
Rune's heart raced. The two females clashed and withdrew with horrifying skill, then clashed again.
Liar I might be, Lydia growled, smiling savagely, but at least I'm no fool.
The harpy blinked as the hind shoved her another inch, right to the edge of Rune's reach. Rune grabbed the harpy's ankle and yanked. The angel shouted, tumbling down again, wings splaying. The hind struck. Swift as a cobra, Lydia plunged her sword into the top of the harpy's spine, right through her neck. The tip of her blade hit the floor before the harpy's body collided with it. The harpy tried to scream, but the hind had angled the blow to pierce her vocal cords. The next blow, with her parrying dagger, plunged through the harpy's ear and into the skull beneath. Another move, and her head rolled away. And then, silence. The harpy's wings twitched. Rune slowly lifted his gaze to the hind. Lydia stood over him, splattered with blood. Every line of the body he'd seen and felt was taut, on alert. Hunt breathed. You're a double agent. But Lydia launched into motion, grabbing Rune's chains, unlocking them with a key from her imperial uniform.
We don't have much time. You have to get out of here.
She'd sworn she wouldn't come for him if he got into trouble, but here she was. Was this a trap? Bryce demanded.
Not in the way you're thinking, Lydia said.
As the hind, she'd kept her voice low and soft. Day's voice, this person's voice, sounded higher. She came close enough while she freed Rune's feet that he could scent her again.
I tried to warn you that I believed Rigelus wanted you to come here, that he knew you would, but I was interrupted
by Pollux.
When I was finally able to reach out to you again, it was clear that only those of us in Sandriel's Triari knew about Rigelus's plan, and that Mordok had been feeding him information regarding your whereabouts. To warn you off would have been to give myself away.
Hunt glowered as Rune stared at the hind.
And we couldn't have that, the angel said.
Mordok. How had the Bloodhound not noticed the subtle shift in Lydia's scent, in Rune's? Or had he, and been biding his time to spring the trap shut? Lydia shot Hunt a glare, not backing down as she started on Bryce's chains.
There is a great deal that you do not understand.
She was so beautiful, and utterly soulless.
You remind me that I'm alive, she'd told him.
You killed Sophie, Bryce hissed.
No,
Lydia shook her head.
I called for the city ship to save her. They arrived too late.
What? Athalar blurted. Rune blinked as the hind pulled a white stone from her pocket.
These are calling stones, beacons. The Ocean Queen enchanted them. They'll summon whatever city ship is closest when dropped into the water. Her mystics sense when the ships might be needed in a certain area, and the stones are used as a precise method of location.
She'd done it that day in Idra, too. She'd summoned the ship that saved them.
Sophie drowned because of you,
Rune growled, his voice like gravel.
People died at your hands.
There is so much to tell you, Rune,
she said softly, and his name on her tongue. But Rune looked away from her. He could have sworn the hind flinched. He didn't care, not as Hunt asked Bryce.
Did you find out the truth?
Bryce paled.
I did.
Steps sounded down the hall, far away but approaching. The hind went still.
Pollux.
Her hearing had to be better than his, or she knew the cadence of the bastard's steps so well she could tell from a distance.
We have to make it appear real,
she said to Bryce, to Rune, voice pleading, utterly desperate.
The information lines can't be broken.
Her voice cracked.
Do you understand?
Bryce did, apparently. She smirked.
I shouldn't enjoy this so much.
Before Rune could react, his sister punched the shifter in the face, sent her sprawling. He shouted, and those footsteps down the hall turned into a run. Bryce leapt upon the hind, fists flying, and the harpy's blood on the floor smeared all over them both. Hunt struggled against his chains, and Rune got to his feet, lunging toward the females. Pollux appeared in the doorway. He beheld the dead harpy, beheld Bryce bloodied with the hind beneath her, being pummeled, beheld Rune advancing, and drew his sword. Rune could have sworn the hind whispered something in Bryce's ear before Pollux grabbed Bryce by the neck and hauled her off the other female.
Hello, princess, the monster crooned.
Hunt had no words in his head as the male he hated above all others grabbed his mate by the neck, held her off the floor so that the tips of her sneakers dragged on the bloodied stone.
Look what you did to my friend, Pollux said in that dead, soulless voice, and to my lover.
I'll do the same to you, Bryce managed to say, feet kicking blindly.
Put her the fuck down,
Hunt snarled. Pollux sneered at him and did no such thing. The hind had managed to pull her sword from the harpy's body and pointed at Rune.
Back against the wall or she dies.
Her voice was flat and low, as Hunt had always heard it, not at all like the softer, higher register of a moment before. Agent Daybright hadn't needed saving after all, and the hind, the female that Hunt had seen so mercilessly stride through the world? She was a rebel, had saved their asses that day in the waters off Aedra by summoning the city ship with the calling stone. It hadn't been Bryce's light at all.
We got your message, they'd said.
Rune looked like he'd been punched in the gut, in the soul. But Pollux finally lowered Bryce to the ground, an arm wrapping around her middle as he grinned at Hunt. He sniffed Bryce's hair. Hunt's vision went black with rage as Pollux said,
This is going to be so satisfying.
Bryce was shaking. She knew. Whatever the truth was about the Asteri, about all of this, she knew. They had to get her out, so that information wouldn't die here. So she wouldn't die here. The next few minutes were a blur. Guards flowed in. Hunt found himself being hauled to his feet, Bryce chained beside him, Rune on her other side, the hind stalking next to Pollux as they walked from the dungeons to an elevator bay.
Their graces await you, the hind said with such unfeeling ice that even Hunt bought it, and wondered if he'd imagined the female helping them, imagined that she'd risked everything to save Rune from the harpy. From the way Rune was glaring at the hind, Hunt could only guess what the prince was thinking.
They entered the elevator, the hind and Pollux facing them. The hammer smirked at Hunt. If they could kill Pollux... But cameras monitored this elevator, the halls, the hind would be revealed. Bryce was still shaking beside him. He hooked his fingers through hers, sticky with blood, as much movement as his chains would allow. He tried not to glance down when he felt her own chains. The manacles were loose, unlocked. Only Bryce's fingertips held them in place. The hind hadn't secured them. Bryce met Hunt's stare, pained and full of love. The hind had known it too, that Bryce, with the intel she carried, had to get out. Was the hind planning something? Had she whispered a plan in Bryce's ear? Bryce said nothing, just held his hand. For the last time, he realized, as the elevator shot up through the Crystal Palace, he was holding his mate's hand for the last time. Rune stared at the female he'd thought he knew, at her impassive, beautiful face, her empty golden eyes. It was a mask. He'd seen the real face moments ago, had joined his body and soul with hers days ago. He knew what fire burned there.
Night.
Her voice was a distant, soft plea in his mind, like Lydia was trying to find a way to link their thoughts again, like the crystal in his pocket had yet again forged a path.
Night.
Rune ignored the begging voice, the way it broke as she said,
Rune?
He fortified the walls of his mind, brick by brick.
Rune!
Lydia banged on the walls of his mind, so he encased it with iron, with black steel. Pollux smiled at him, slid a hand around the hind's blood-spattered throat and kissed under her ear. Do you like the way my lover looks, princeling? Something lethal snapped free at that hand on her neck, the way it squeezed, and the slight glimmer of pain in Lydia's eyes. He'd hurt her. Pollux had hurt her again and again, and she'd voluntarily submitted so she could keep feeding the rebels intel. She'd endured a monster like Pollux for this. Maybe we'll put on a show for you before the end, Pollux said, and licked up the column of Lydia's neck, lapping up the blood splattered there. Rune bared his teeth in a silent snarl. He'd kill him, slowly and thoroughly, punishing him for every touch, every hand he'd put on Lydia in pain and torment. He had no idea where that landed him, why he wanted and needed that steel-clad wall between him and Lydia, even as his blood howled to murder Pollux, how he could abhor her and need her, be drawn to her in the same breath. Pollux laughed against her skin, then pulled away. Lydia smiled coolly, like it all meant nothing, like she felt nothing at all. But that voice against the walls of his mind shouted, "Rune!" She banged against the black steel and stone, over and over. Her voice broke again. "Rune!" Rune locked her out. She'd taken countless lives, but she'd worked to save them, too. Did it change anything? He'd known Day was someone high up. He'd have been a fool to think anyone with that level of clearance with the Asteri would come without complications. But for it to be her... What the hell did it even say about him, that he was capable of feeling what he did for someone like her? His ally was his enemy. His enemy was his lover. He focused on the gore splattered on her. Lydia had so much blood on her hands that there would never be any washing it away. Bryce knew no one was coming to save them, knew it was likely her fault. She could barely stand to feel Hunt's fingers against hers as they walked down the long crystal hallway. Couldn't stand the stickiness of the harpy's blood as it dried on her skin. She'd never seen a hall so long. A wall of windows stretched along one side, overlooking the palace grounds and ancient city beyond. On the other side, busts of the Asteri in their various forms frowned down upon them from atop pedestals. Their masters, their overlords, the parasites who had lured them all into this world, who had fed off them for 15,000 years. Rigelus wouldn't have told her so much if he planned to ever let her go again. She wished she'd called her mom and Randall, wished she could hear their voices one more time, wished she'd made things right with Juniper, wished she'd lain low and been normal and lived out a long, happy life with Hunt. It wouldn't have been normal, though. It would have been contented ignorance, and any children they had, their power would one day have also been siphoned off to fuel these cities and the monsters who ruled them. The cycle had to stop somewhere. Other worlds had managed to overthrow them. Hell had managed to kick them out. But Bryce knew she and Hunt and Rune wouldn't be the ones to stop the cycle. That task would be left to others. Cormac would continue to fight. Maybe Therion and Hypaxia and Ethan would pick up the cause. Perhaps Fury, too. Gods, did Jessaba know? She'd kept Parthos's remaining books, knowing the Asteri would want to wipe out the narrative that contradicted their own sanctioned history. So Jessaba had to know what kind of beings ruled here, didn't she? The Hind led their group down the hall, Pollux at their backs. At the far, far end of the passage, Bryce could make out a small arch, a quartz gate. Bryce's blood chilled. Did Rigelus plan to have her open it as some sort of test before cracking wide the rifts? She'd do it. Rigelus had Hunt and Rune in his claws. She knew her mate and brother would tell her that their lives weren't worth it, but weren't they? The Hind turned a third of the way down the hall, toward a pair of colossal open doors. Seven thrones towered on a dais at the far end of the cavernous crystal space. All but one lay empty. And the center throne, the occupied one, it glowed, full of first light, funneling it right into the being who sat atop it. Something feral opened an eye in Bryce's soul and snarled.
I suppose you're pleased to have added yet another angel to your kill list with the death of the harpy.
The bright hand of the Asteri drawled to Bryce, stare sweeping over the blood caked on her.
I do hope you're ready to pay for it.
Chapter 76. Hunt stared at his severed wings, mounted on the wall high above the Asteri's thrones. Shahar's pristine white wings were displayed above his, still glowing after all these centuries, right in the center of the array. Isaiah's were to the left of Hunt's.
So many wings,
so many fallen, all preserved here. He'd known the Asteri had kept them, but seeing them? It was proof of his failure, proof that he should never have come here, that they should have told Ophion, Antharion, and Cormac to fuck off. I did you a favor, killing the harpy, Bryce said to Rigelus, who watched her with lifeless eyes. At least the five others weren't here. She was a drag. Hunt blinked at his blood-splattered mate. Her eyes smoldered like coals, defiant and raging. She'd seen his wings, too. Rigelus propped his slender chin on a fist, leaning a bony elbow against his throne. He appeared as a fey boy of 17 or so, dark-haired and gangly, a weak facade to veil the ancient monster beneath.
Shall we banter some more, Miss Quinlan, or can I get to the part where I order you to confess the names of your allies?
Bryce smirked, and Hunt had never loved her more. On her other side, Rune glanced between the Asteri and his sister, as if trying to formulate a plan. Hunt caught a familiar scent, and he twisted to see Baxian and Mordok enter behind them. They walked to where the hind and the hammer stood by the pillars, blocking the way out. Rigelus had known of their mission here before they'd even reached Pangera's shores, before they'd even set out. Mordok had tracked their scents with that bloodhound's gift all around the city, marking each location and reporting directly to the Bright Hand. And Hunt had left his phone in Lunathian, for fear of it being tracked here. Baxian wouldn't have been able to warn him, if he'd even been willing to risk doing so. Hunt's eyes met Baxian's. The male revealed nothing, not one bit of recognition. Had everything he'd told them been a trap, a long con to get them here? Bryce said to Rigelus, drawing Hunt's attention away, "There is no one else. But let's talk about how your intergalactic parasites who trick us into making the drop so you can feed off our first light, and then feed off our soul's second light when we die." Hunt went still. He could have sworn someone behind him, Baxian or the Hind, perhaps, started. Rigelus snorted.
Is this your way of telling your companions what you know?
Bryce didn't avert her gaze. Hell yeah, it is. Along with the fact that if we destroy that core of first light beneath this palace...
Silence!
Rigelus hissed, and the room shuddered with power. But Hunt's mind reeled. The Asteri? The first light? Bryce caught his stare, her eyes brimming with rage and purpose. There was more, she seemed to say. So much more to be used against the Asteri. Rigelus pointed at Rune.
I'm sure you could enlighten me as to who has been helping you. I know of Prince Cormac. I'd hoped his rebel activities might be of use someday. When we learned of his treachery, the others wanted to kill him and be done with it. But I thought it might be valuable to see where and to whom he led us. A prince of the Fae would no doubt wind up around other powerful Vanir, perhaps even try to recruit some of them, and thus root out the corruption among our most loyal subjects. So why kill one traitor when we could eventually kill many? Alas, he's dead now. That's where my other siblings are, drawn out to the lab, as you no doubt expected. But they reported that another male was with the prince and fled.
Bryce made a low sound in her throat, Rigelus turned to her.
Oh, yes. Cormac incinerated himself and the lab. A great setback, considering how useful he was. But one we shall overcome, of course. Especially with Pippa Spetsos among the dead.
At least Therion had escaped unidentified.
Perhaps we shall call in your father to assist with the questioning.
Rigelus went on to Rune, bored and cool.
He was so skilled at wielding his fire to get things out of you when you were a boy.
Rune stiffened. Hunt took in Bryce's blood-flecked features. He'd only once seen this level of rage on her face. Not toward Rigelus, but the male who'd sired her. It was the same rage he'd beheld that day she'd killed Micah.
Isn't that what so many of the tattoos are for?
Rigelus continued.
To hide the scars he left on you. I'm afraid we'll have to ruin some of the ink this time around.
Fucking hell. Bryce's lips had gone white from pressing them together so hard. Her eyes were bright with unshed tears. Rune looked at his sister and said softly,
You brought so much joy into my life, Bryce.
It was perhaps the only goodbye they'd be able to make. Hunt reached for Bryce's fingers, but she stepped forward, lifted her chin in that defiant fuck you way he loved so much. You want me to open a portal for you? Fine, but only if you let them go and agree to leave them unharmed, forever. Hunt's blood iced over.
That was why you lured us here?
He found himself demanding of the Asteri, even as he roared with outrage at Bryce's offer. Rigelus said,
I couldn't very well snatch you off the streets. Not such notorious public figures. Not without the right charges to bring you in.
A smirk at Bryce.
Your friend Adis will be terribly disappointed to learn. You couldn't tell the difference between the real Prince of the Chasm and myself. He's terribly vain in that way.
Hunt started, but Bryce seethed. You pretended to be Adis that night.
Who else could break through the wards on your apartment? You didn't even suspect anything when he encouraged you toward rebellious activities. Though, I suppose credit for that goes to me. I played his rage about Thea and Peleus quite well, don't you think?
Fuck, he'd anticipated their every move. Rigelus went on.
And you didn't even look that hard into the reapers I sent from this city to nudge you. The Bone Quarter was a testing ground for your true power, you see, since you seemed to have little awareness or interest in it all summer. You were to hone your powers, all so we might put them to good use. You played along beautifully.
Hunt's fingers curled into fists. He should have seen it, should have pushed Bryce away from this mess, should have taken her at the first hint of trouble, and gone to a place where no one could ever find them. But this was Midgard. No matter where they went, no matter how far from Lunathian or the Eternal City, the Asteri would always find them. Rigelus sighed dramatically at their stunned silence.
This all seems very familiar, doesn't it? A starborn queen who allied with a prince of hell, who trusted him deeply, and ultimately paid the price.
Hunt mastered himself enough to nod toward the seventh, always empty throne.
Hell got one on you in the end, though, I think.
Rigelus's body glowed with ire, but his voice remained silky smooth.
I look forward to facing Apollyon again. Mordok suspected that the Star Eater had been trying to get your attention these past weeks, to prod you along in his own way.
So one Prince of Hell had been a fake, the other true. Apollyon really had sent the Deathwalkers, presumably to test Bryce's powers, just as Rigelus also wanted, and Hunt's own, and wanted it so badly that he was willing to risk her death should she not be up to the task. But she'd teleported that night, used that ability to defeat the Deathstalkers, had started to grasp the gift and progressed in leaps and bounds since then, literally. Apollyon must have known she'd need those skills, perhaps for this very moment. The Gorsian chains on Bryce's wrists were unlocked. If she could throw them off, she could get out. If the Hind could somehow get his own chains off, he'd block the Asteri and Bryce could keep running. Hunt said, one last try.
You're full of shit, and Mordok should get his nose checked. We're not rebels. Celestina can vouch for us.
Rigelus laughed, and Hunt bristled.
Celestina? You mean the Archangel who reported to me that you'd lied about going to visit Miss Quinlan's family a few weeks ago, and then reported to me immediately when she saw you leave the barracks heavily armed?
The words landed like a phantom punch to Hunt's gut.
Love is a trap, Celestina had told him.
Was this her way of protecting what she loved? Proving her trustworthiness to the Asteri by selling Hunt and his friends out so that they might react kindly if they learned about Hypaxia? Had she had any idea the witch she loved was involved?
Rigelus seemed to read those questions on Hunt's face because he said,
She might have once been a friend of Shahar, Orion, but with so much personally on the line for her, she is no friend to you. At least, not when it comes to protecting those she cherishes most.
Why are you doing this? Rune asked hoarsely. Rigelus frowned with distaste.
It is a matter of survival. A glance at Bryce. Though her first task for us shall be one of a personal matter, I think.
You're going to attack Hell, Hunt breathed. Was that what Apollyon was anticipating?
Why he'd kept telling them again and again that Hell's armies were readying? Not to attack this world, but to defend Hell itself, to ally with any who'd stand against the Asteri.
No, Rigelus said. Even Hell is not at the top of our list of those from whom we shall exact vengeance.
Again that smile at Bryce.
The star on your chest. Do you know what it is?
Let's assume I know nothing, Bryce said grimly. Rigelus inclined his head.
It's a beacon to the world from which the Fae originally came. It sometimes glows when nearest the Fae who have undiluted bloodlines from that world. Prince Cormac, for example.
It glowed for Hunt, Bryce shot back.
It also glows for those who you choose as your loyal companions, knights.
So what? Bryce demanded.
So, that star will lead us back to that world, through you. They overthrew our brethren who once ruled there. We have not forgotten. Our initial attempt at revenge was foiled by your ancestor who also bore that star on her chest. The Fae have still not atoned for the deaths of our brothers and sisters. Their homeworld was rich in magic. I crave more of it.
Bryce shook, but Hunt's heart cracked as she squared her shoulders. My bargain holds. You let Hunt and Rune go freely and unharmed, forever, and I'll help you.
Bryce,
Rune pleaded, but Hunt knew there was no arguing with her.
Fine,
Rigelus said, and smiled, triumph on every line of his lanky body.
You may say goodbye, as a sign of my gratitude for your assistance.
Bryce turned to Hunt, and the terror and pain and grief on her gore-splattered face threatened to bring him to his knees. He slipped his chained hands around her head, pulling her close, whispered in her ear. Her fingers bunched in his shirt, as if in silent confirmation. So Hunt pulled back, stared into his mate's beautiful face for the last time. He laughed softly, a sound of wonder at odds with the crystal throne room and the monsters in it.
I love you. I wish I'd said it more, but... I love you, Quinlan, and...
His throat closed up. His eyes stinging, his lips brushed her brow.
Our love is stronger than time, greater than any distance. Our love spans across stars and worlds. I will find you again. I promise.
He kissed her, and she shuddered, silently crying as her mouth moved against his own. He savored the warmth and taste of her, etching it into his soul. Then he stepped back, and Bryce faced Rune. She couldn't do this. Her heart was shattering. Her bones were screaming that this was wrong, wrong, wrong. She couldn't leave them, couldn't go through with what Hunt had whispered to her. She clung to her brother, unable to stop her sobbing, even as a small weight dropped into her pocket. But Rune whispered in her ear, "I lied to the Autumn King about what the Oracle told me as a boy." She stilled. Rune went on, swift and urgent. "The Oracle told me that the royal line would end with me, that I am the last of the line, Bryce." She tried to pull back to gape at him, but he held her firm. "But maybe she didn't see that you would come along, that you would walk this path. You have to live. I can see it on your face. You don't want to do any of this. But you have to live, Bryce. You have to be queen." She'd guessed what the Autumn King had done to Rune, how he'd tortured him as a boy, though she'd never confirmed it. And that debt, she'd make her sire repay it someday.
"I don't accept that," Bryce breathed to Rune. "I don't." "I do. I always have. Whether I die right now, or whether I'm just infertile, I don't know."
He chuckled.
"Why do you think I partied so hard?"
She couldn't laugh. Not about this.
"I don't buy that bullshit for one second."
"It doesn't matter now."
Then Rune said into her mind,
"Grab the star sword when you go."
"Rune."
"It's yours. Take it. You'll need it. You got the chains unhooked?"
"Yes." She'd used the key the Hind had slipped her to unlock Hunt's and Rune's manacles while she held them.
"Good. I told Athalar the signal. You're ready?"
"No."
Rune pressed his brow against hers. "We need armies, Bryce. We need you to go to hell through that gate and bring hell's armies back with you to fight these bastards. But if Apollyon's cost is too high, don't come back to this world."
Her brother pulled away, and Rune said, shining with pride,
"Long live the queen."
Bryce didn't give the others a chance to puzzle it out. She flicked her wrists, chains falling to the floor as she grabbed the star sword from Rune and whirled toward Rigelus. She plunged into her power in a blink, and before the bright hand could shout, she blasted him with starlight. Hunt threw his chains to the ground the moment Rune said the word queen, and as his mate launched her blinding power at Rigelus, Hunt hurled his at the male too. Lightning struck the marble pillar just above the crystal throne. It was a gamble, directing his initial blast of power at Rigelus to keep him down, rather than charging up Bryce and risking an attack from Rigelus before it was done. Behind them, shouting rose, and Hunt twisted to see Bryce running toward the doors, star sword in hand. Pollux lunged for her, but Baxian was there. He tackled the male to the crystal floor. Behind him, Mordok was bleeding from a gash in his throat. The Hind was on the floor, unconscious. Had Baxian's treachery been a surprise to her? Hunt supposed he didn't care. Not as Baxian got Pollux down, and Bryce raced through the doors, out into the endless hallway. She turned left, red hair streaming behind her, and then she was gone. Hunt whirled back toward Rigelus, but too late. Power, hot and aching, blasted him into a nearby pillar. Glowing like a god, Rigelus leapt off the dais, the crystal floor splintering beneath him, and barreled after Bryce, death raging in his eyes. Bryce's heart cracked piece by piece with each step she ran from that throne room. As she sped down the long hall, the busts of the Asteri damned her with their hateful faces. A tidal wave of power rose behind her, and she dared to look over her shoulder to find Rigelus on her tail. He blazed white with magic, fury radiating from him.
"Come on, Hunt. Come on. Come on."
Rigelus sent out a blast of power, and Bryce zoomed left. The Asteri's power smashed through a window, glass spraying. Bryce slipped on the shards, but kept running toward the arch at the end of the hall, the gate she'd opened to take her to hell. She'd take her chances with Adis and Thanatos and Apollyon, get their armies and bring them back to Midgard. Rigelus shot another spear of power, and Bryce ducked, sliding low just as it shattered a marble bust of Ostris. Fragments sliced her face, her neck, her arms, but then she was up and running again, clenching the star sword so hard her hand ached. The slide had cost her. Rigelus was 10 feet behind, 5, his hand stretched for her trailing hair. Lightning speared down the hall, shattering windows and statues in its wake. Bryce welcomed it into her heart, her back, welcomed it into the tattoo there, as Hunt's power singed her very blood and left it sparking. Lightning ruptured from her scar like a bullet passing through, right into the archway of the gate. She didn't dare see if Hunt still stood after his flawless shot, not as the air of the gate's arch turned black, murky. Rigelus's fingers snared in her hair. Bryce gave herself to the wind and darkness and teleported for the gate, only to land 10 feet ahead of Rigelus as her powers had hit a wall. Bryce could sense them now, a series of wards, like those Hypaxia had said the Underking had used to entrap her and Ethan. But Rigelus shouted in rage and surprise, as if shocked she'd even managed to get that far, and slung his power again. 10 feet at a time, then. Bryce teleported, and another statue lost its head. Again, and again, and again, Rigelus shot his power at her, and Bryce leapt through space, ward to ward, zigging and zagging, glass and countless statues to the Asteri's egos shattering, the gate nearing. Bryce leapt back, right behind Rigelus. He whirled, and she blasted a wall of light into his face. He howled, and she teleported once more. Bryce landed 10 feet from the gate's gaping maw and kept running. Rigelus roared as Bryce jumped into the awaiting darkness. It caught her, sticky like a web. Time slowed to a glacial drip. Rigelus was still roaring, lunging. Bryce thrust her power out, willed the gate to take her and her alone, and she was falling, falling, falling while standing still, suspended in the archway, sucked backward so that her hair trailed outward toward Rigelus's straining fingers. "No," he bellowed. It was the last sound Bryce heard as the darkness within the gate swallowed her whole. She fell. Slowly and without end, and sideways, not a plunge down but a yank across. The pressure in her ears threatened to pulp her brain, and she was screaming into wind and stars and emptiness, screaming to Hunt and Rune, left behind in that crystal palace, screaming. Chapter 77. Hunt could barely get a breath down around the stone gag. A Gorsian stone, to match the ones clamped around his wrists and neck. The same kind contained Rune and Baxian, as the two males were led toward the doors of the throne room by Rigelus and his underlings. Not one flicker of lightning remained in Hunt's body. The hind strode beside Rigelus, speaking softly as they walked past where Hunt was on his knees outside the doors. She didn't so much as look at Rune. The prince only stared ahead. Baxian was escorted over, bloodied and bruised from the fight with Pollux. Mordok was recovering from his slit throat, hate simmering from him as he lay bleeding on the floor. Hunt gave the bloodhound a savage smile as a ribbon of Rigelus's power hauled Hunt to his feet. "A short stop before the dungeons, I think," Rigelus announced, turning left toward the shattered ruin along the wall, toward the now empty gate. Hunt was powerless to do anything but follow, Rune and Baxian with him. He'd been at the end of the hall when Bryce had made her spectacular run, teleporting as fast as the wind toward the black hole that had opened within the small gate. No trace of the blackness or Bryce remained now. Hunt could only pray that Bryce had reached hell, that she'd locate Adis and he'd protect her as they rallied hell's armies and brought them back through the rift into Midgard. To save them. Hunt doubted he'd be around to see it, doubted Rune or Baxian would either. Rigelus halted before the gate.
Get the angel on his knees.
Bryce's scent still lingered in the air of the empty space, framed by the gate. Hunt focused on that scent and that scent alone as Pollux shoved him to the floor before the gate. If this was it, he could die knowing Bryce had gotten away. She'd gone from one hell to a literal one, but she'd gotten away. Their last chance at salvation.
Go ahead, Hammer,
Rigelus said, smiling at Hunt, cold death in his ageless eyes. Hunt could feel Rune and Baxian watching in muted horror. Hunt bowed over his knees, waiting for the blow to his neck.
Bryce, Bryce, Bryce.
Pollux's hands clamped onto either side of his face, holding it upright like he'd snap Hunt's neck with his bare hands. Pollux laughed softly. Hunt knew why a moment later as Rigelus approached, a hand lifted and near blinding with white light.
I don't think I need one of the crones this time,
the bright hand said.
No, no, anything but this.
Hunt thrashed, but Pollux held him firm, smile unfaltering. Rigelus laid his glowing hand on Hunt's brow, and pain erupted through his skull, his muscles, his blood, as if the very marrow of his bones were being burned into mist. The Asteri's power slithered and spiderwebbed across Hunt's brow, piercing into him with every spike of the halo's thorns that Rigelus tattooed there. Hunt screamed then. It echoed off the stones, off the gate. Beside him, Baxian started inhaling sharp, jagged breaths, like the hellhound knew he was next. The pain across Hunt's brow became blinding, his vision splintering. The halo kept spreading over his skull, worse than any Gorsian shackle. His power writhed in its iron grip, no longer his to fully command, just as his own life, his freedom, his future with Bryce, gone. Hunt screamed again, and as darkness swept in to claim him, he wondered if that soul scream, not the halo, was what Rigelus wanted. If the Asteri believed the sound of his suffering might carry through the gate and into hell itself, where Bryce could hear him. Then, Hunt knew nothing at all. Chapter 78 Hell had grass, and mist. Those were Bryce's first two thoughts as she landed, or appeared. One moment she was falling sideways, and then her right shoulder collided with a wall of green that turned out to be the ground. She panted, mind spinning so violently she could only lie amid the drifting, chill fog. Her fingers dug into the verdant grass, blood coated her hands, crusted beneath her nails. She had to get up, had to start moving before one of Hell's creatures sniffed her out and ripped her to shreds. If those Deathstalkers found her, they'd kill her in an instant. The Star Sword. There, a foot beyond her head. Bryce trembled as she eased onto her knees, bending to hold them tight. Hunt. She could have sworn she heard his screams echoing in the mist as she fell. She had to get up. Find a way to Aedas, yet she couldn't move. To get up would be to walk away from her world, from Hunt and Rune and whatever the Asteri were doing to them. Get up, she told herself, gritting her teeth. The mists parted ahead, peeling back to reveal a gentle turquoise river perhaps 50 feet from where she knelt, flowing right past the lawn. She was on someone's clipped, immaculate lawn, and across the river, emerging from the mist, a city, ancient and beautiful, like something on a Pangaran postcard. Indistinct shapes meandered through the mist on the other side of the river, the demons of hell. Get up. Bryce swallowed hard, as if she could drink down her shaking and slid out a leg to rise. The harpy's blood still soaked her leggings, the fabric sticky against her skin. Something icy and sharp pressed against her throat. A cool male voice spoke above her, behind her, in a language she did not recognize, but the curt words and tone were clear enough. Don't fucking move. Bryce lifted her hands and reached for her power, Only splintered shards remained. The male voice demanded something in that strange language, and Bryce stayed on her knees. He hissed, and then a strong hand clamped on her shoulder, hauling her up and twisting her to face him. She glimpsed black boots, dark, scale-like armor over a tall, muscled body. Wings, great black wings, a demon's wings. But the male face that stared through the mists, grave and lethal, it was beautiful, despite the fact that his hazel eyes held no mercy. He spoke again, in a soft voice that promised pain. Bryce couldn't stop her chest from heaving wildly.
Aedas, I need to see Aedas. Can you take me to him?
Her voice broke. The winged male swept his gaze over her, assessing and wary, noted that the blood covering her was not her own. His attention drifted to the star sword lying in the grass between them. His eyes widened slightly. Bryce lunged a step toward him, making to grab the front of his intricate armor. He easily sidestepped the move, face impassive as she asked,
"Can you take me to Prince Aedas?"
She couldn't stop her tears then. The male's brow knitted.
"Please," Bryce begged. "Please."
The male's face didn't soften as he picked up the sheathed star sword, then gestured for her to step closer. Bryce obeyed, shaking, wondering if she should be fighting, screaming. With scarred hands, the demon pulled a scrap of black cloth from a hidden pocket in his armor, held it up to his face, feigning putting it on, a blindfold. Bryce breathed in, trying to calm herself as she nodded. The male's hands were gentle but thorough as he fitted it tightly over her eyes. Then hands were at her knees and back, and the ground was gone. They were flying. Only the flap of his leathery wings and the sighing mist filled her ears, so different from the rippling hush of Hunt's feathers in the wind. Bryce tried to use the time in the air to stop shaking, but she couldn't even form a solid thought. They glided downward, her stomach tipping with the movement, and then they landed, the thump of the demon's boots hitting the ground echoing through her. He set her down, taking her by the hand. A door creaked open. Warm air greeted her, then the door shut. He said something she didn't understand, and then she was toppling forward. He caught her and sighed. She could have sworn he sounded exasperated. He gave no warning as he hauled her over a shoulder and tromped down a set of stairs before entering somewhere nice-smelling. Roses? Bread? They ate bread in hell? Had flowers? A dark, cold world, the Asteri had said in their notes on the planet. Floorboards groaned beneath his boots, and then Bryce found herself again on solid ground, carpets cushioning her feet. He led her by the hand and pushed her downward. Bryce tensed, fighting it, but he did it again, and she sat, in a comfy chair. He spoke in that silken voice, and she shook her head.
"I don't understand you," she said rawly. "I don't know Hell's languages, but Aedas, Prince Aedas."
He didn't reply.
"Please," she repeated, "I need to find Prince Aedas, my world, Midgard. It's in grave danger, and my mate."
Her voice broke, and she doubled over in the darkness.
"I will find you again,"
Hunt had promised. But he wouldn't. He couldn't. He had no way to get here, and she had no way to get home. Unless Aedas or Apollyon knew how to use the horn, had magic that could charge it. She'd left Hunt and Rune, had run and left them, and Bryce sobbed.
"Oh, gods,"
she wept. She tore off the blindfold, baring her teeth.
"Aedas,"
she shouted at the cold-faced male.
"Get fucking Aedas."
He didn't so much as blink, didn't reveal one hint of emotion that he cared. But this room, this house? Dark oak wood floors and furniture. Rich velvet fabrics, a crackling fire, books on the shelves lining one wall, a cart of liquor and crystal decanters beside the black marble fireplace, and through the archway beyond the winged mail, a foyer and a dining room. Its style could have fit in with her father's study, with Jessica's gallery. The male watched cautiously. She swallowed down her tears, straightening her shoulders, cleared her throat.
Where am I? What level of hell?
Hell,
he said at last. Hell! Yes, hell! She gestured to the house, the complete opposite of what she'd expected. What level? Pit? Chasm? He shook his head, brow furrowing. The front door in the foyer opened, and multiple people rushed in, males and females, all speaking that strange language. Bryce beheld the first one and shot to her feet. The petite, dark-haired female with angular eyes like furies drew up short. Her red-painted mouth dropped open, no doubt at the blood all over Bryce's face and body. This female was Faye, clad in beautiful yet thoroughly old-fashioned clothes, like the stuff they wore on a Valen. Another winged male, broader than the other, swaggered in, a pretty female with brown-gold hair at his side. Also Faye, also wearing clothes that seemed out of some sort of fantasy film. Bryce blurted, I've been trying to ask him, but he doesn't understand. Is this hell? I need to see Prince Adis. The dark-haired one turned to the others and said something that had them all angling their heads at Bryce. The swaggering male sniffed, trying to read the scent of the blood on her. Bryce swallowed hard. She knew only one other language, and that one. Her heart thundered. Bryce said in the ancient language of the Fae, of the Starborn, Is this world hell? I need to see Prince Adis. The petite dark-haired female staggered back, a hand to her mouth. The others gaped, as if the small female's shock was a rare occurrence. The female eyed the star sword then, looked to the first winged male, Bryce's captor, nodded to the dark-hilted knife at his side. The male drew it, and Bryce flinched. Flinched, but what the fuck? The knife could have been the twin of the star sword, black-hilted and bladed. It was its twin. The star sword began to hum within its sheath, glittering white light leaking from where leather met the dark hilt. The dagger. The male dropped the dagger to the plush carpet. All of them retreated as it flared with dark light, as if in answer. Alpha and Omega.
Gwydion,
the dark-haired female whispered, indicating the star sword. The broader male sucked in a breath, then said something in that language she couldn't comprehend. The brunette at his side snapped something back that sounded like a reprimand.
Is this hell?
Bryce asked again in the old tongue of the Fae. The dark-haired female observed Bryce from head to toe, the clothes so thoroughly at odds with their own attire, the blood and cuts. Then she replied in the old tongue,
No one has spoken that language in this world for 15,000 years.
Bryce rubbed at her face. Had she traveled in time, somehow? Or did hell occupy a different time and...
Please, she said, I need to find Prince Adis.
I do not know who that is.
Apollyon, then. Surely you know the Prince of the Pit.
I do not know of such people. This world is not hell.
Bryce slowly shook her head.
Then, where am I?
She surveyed the silent others, the winged males and the other fey female, who stared coolly.
What world is this?
The front door opened again. First, a lovely female with the same brown-gold hair as the one already standing before Bryce entered. She wore a loose white shirt over brown pants, both splattered with paint. Her hands were tattooed to the elbows in intricate swirls. But her blue-gray eyes were wary, soft and curious, but wary. The winged, dark-haired male who stepped in behind her. Bryce gasped.
Rune?
The male blinked. His eyes were the same shade of violet blue as Rune's, his short hair the same gleaming black. This male's skin was browner, but the face, the posture. It was her brother's. His ears were pointed too, though he also possessed those leathery wings like the two other males. The female beside him asked the petite female a question in their language. But the male continued to stare at Bryce, at the blood on her, at the star sword and the knife, the blades still gleaming with their opposite lights. He lifted his gaze to her, stars in his eyes, actual stars. Bryce pleaded with the petite female.
My world, Midgard, it's in grave danger. My mate, he...
She couldn't get the words out.
I didn't mean to come here. I meant to go to hell, to get aid from the princes. But I don't know what this world is, or how to find hell. I need your help.
It was all there was left to do. Throw herself at their mercy and pray they were decent people. That even if she'd come from another world, they'd recognize her as Fae and be compassionate. The petite female seemed to repeat Bryce's words to the others. The female with the tattooed hands asked Bryce a question in their language. The petite one translated.
She wants to know what your name is.
Bryce glanced from the tattooed female to the beautiful male at her side. They both possessed an air of quiet, gentle authority. The others all seemed to wait for their cues. So Bryce addressed the two of them as she lifted her chin.
My name is Bryce Quinlan.
The male stepped forward, tucking in his wings. He smiled slightly and said in the old language, in a voice like glorious night,
Hello, Bryce Quinlan. My name is Rhysand.
Epilogue. Ethan Holstrom crouched, a hulking wolf among the rain-lashed shadows outside the astronomer's building, monitoring the few people in the alley braving the storm. No word had come from Pangera, just a mention of an explosion at a lab outside the city, and that was it. He didn't expect to hear anything from Bryce and the others, at least until the next day. But he couldn't help the urge to pace, even as he guarded the doors across the alley. He'd seen no glimpse of the astronomer. No patrons had entered. Had Mordok dragged the wretch off for an interrogation about why Ethan and his friends had visited him, and left the mystics here, unguarded and alone? He'd fucked up guard duty with Hypaxia. He wouldn't make that mistake again, not with the mystic caged beyond those doors. Another Fendir heir to the Prime, an alpha to challenge Sabine. Something moved in the shadows far down the alley, beyond the neon glow of the signs above the tattoo parlors and bars. Swift and hulking and... He sniffed the air. Even with the rain, he knew that scent, knew the golden eyes that glowed in the rainy darkness. Ethan's growl rumbled over the slick cobblestones, his wet fur bristling. Amelie Ravenscroft, his former alpha, only snarled back, sending whatever patrons were on the streets scattering into the buildings, and melted into the dimness. Ethan waited until her scent had faded before letting out a breath. He'd been right to come here then. If he hadn't been here, he glanced to the doors again. He couldn't stay here indefinitely. He'd need others to keep watch while he rested. His phone rang from where he'd left it on the stoop of an alley doorway, and Ethan shifted into his humanoid body before answering.
Flynn, I was about to call you,
to beg for a massive favor. If Sabine came here, or Amelie returned, Pax in tow? The Fae Lord didn't reply immediately. Ethan could have sworn he heard the male swallow. He stilled.
What is it?
Flynn's breathing turned harsh, jagged.
Flynn?
Shit went down.
The Fae Lord seemed to be struggling for words, and to hold back tears.
He couldn't face this. Not again. Not-
Rune and Athalar have been taken prisoner by the Asteri. Dex saw it on the palace feeds. Therian called them from the depth charger pod to say Cormac's dead.
Ethan began shaking his head, even as he contemplated the risk of discussing this on the phone. Breathing was somehow impossible as he whispered,
Bryce?
A long, long pause. Ethan slid to the soaking ground.
She disappeared.
You gotta come hear it from Deck. Is she alive?
Ethan's snarl tore through the rain, bouncing off the bricks. The last we saw her in this world, she was.
What do you mean, in this world?
But he had a terrible feeling that he already knew.
You have to see it for yourself,
Flynn croaked.
I can't,
Ethan bit out. I've got something to do.
We need you,
Flynn said, and his voice was full of an authority that people outside the Ox rarely heard.
We're friends now, Wolf. Get your furry ass over here.
Ethan peered toward the towering doors, felt himself being pulled apart by Erd herself.
I'll be there in 15,
Ethan said, and hung up, slid his phone into his pocket, stalked across the street. A blow from his fist dented the metal doors. The second one broke the locks. The third sent them crumpling inward. No sign of the astronomer. Too bad. He was in the mood for blood tonight. But Ethan stormed to the nearest tub. The wolf mystic floated in the murky, salt-laden water, hair spread around her, eyes closed, breathing mask and tubes back in place.
Wake up.
His words were a low growl.
We're going.
The mystic didn't respond, lost to wherever her mind took her.
I know you can hear me. I need to go somewhere, and I'm not leaving you behind. People are lurking out there who want you dead. So you can either get the fuck up right now, or I can do it for you.
Again, no response. His fingers flexed, claws sliding free, but he kept his hand at his side. It was only a matter of time until someone came to investigate why the doors had been ripped open. But to tear her from that dream state, she'd been so tormented the last time.
Please,
he said softly, head bowing.
My friends need me. My pack needs me.
That's what they'd become. He'd lost his brother, his brother's pack, the pack that would have one day been his. But this one? He wouldn't lose it, would fight until the bitter end to protect it.
Please,
Ethan whispered, voice breaking. Her hand twitched, the water rippling, Ethan's breath caught in his throat. Her brow furrowed. The feeds on her tank began blaring and beeping, flashing red. The hair on Ethan's arms rose. And then, lids fluttering, like the Alpha fought for every inch toward awakening. The lost Fendir heir opened her eyes.
This has been an Audible Studios production of House of Sky and Breath, Crescent City, Book 2. Written by Sarah J. Maas. Performed by Elizabeth Evans. Executive producers Louise Quayle and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2022 by Sarah J. Maas. Sound recording copyright 2022 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.